Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. Today, we're tackling the often confusing and frustrating world of canine health and nutrition. With so many processed food options and medications and supplements, it's really hard to know what's best for our furry friend. To help cut through all the noise, I'm excited to have with us holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan. Her latest book, Yin and Yang 2.0, Nutrition for Dogs, has been described as the book big pet food companies don't want you to read. If you're a canine owner, stay tuned for some doggone great advice. Dr. Morgan will share invaluable insights on how to optimize your pet's nutrition, avoid unnecessary medications, and help them live longer, healthier lives. You know, there's a reason we call dogs man's best friend. They give us unconditional love, and it's time we return the favor. Dr. Morgan is here to show us how. Don't go anywhere. It all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is an internationally renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian, certified in acupuncture, food therapy, and chiropractic care for dogs, cats, and horses. She's a sought-after speaker and host of the popular Naturally Healthy Pets podcast. Dr. Morgan currently serves as the Chief Veterinarian Medical Officer on the Board of Directors for Monkey's House Senior Dog Hospice and Sanctuary. She's dedicated to empowering people to provide longer, healthier lives for their pets through natural healing therapies, minimizing the use of chemicals and vaccinations and all that poor quality processed foods. A best-selling author of 8 books, she has appeared on ABC, CNN, PBS, NBC, and numerous radio shows and podcasts, including this one. Her new book is titled Yin and Yang 2.0 Nutrition for Dogs, Maximizing Health with Whole Foods, Not Drugs. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Judy Morgan.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, it's so great to have you back. First, tell us about your latest book. You know, what inspired you to write the 2.0 version?
So the original Yin and Yang Nutrition for Dogs came out in 2017. And when I wrote it, I used food as healing therapy. So if you have an animal with heart disease, kidney disease, liver disease, bladder stones, we have diets in there to help solve those issues and help avoid medications. And when I wrote it, I had a chapter in there on how to balance the diets, things that you need to make sure you're getting in there as far as your vitamins and minerals. And a lot of people don't like to have to do math. They don't like to have to figure things out on their own. So I wanted to come out with another version with updated recipes where all the recipes are complete and balanced according to FEDIAF and AFCO standards. FEDIAF is the European standard, which is actually better than the American standards, so that people don't have to think. And we want to make it easy. And for the most part, every recipe in the book is balanced using whole foods. I am not a fan of synthetic vitamin mineral additives at all, because that's one of the huge problems that we have in the processed pet food industry. When you see that list of chemical sounding stuff, that is added in synthetic vitamins and minerals. And the body does not recognize those as a natural substance. So a lot of times they're responsible for allergic reactions, inflammation, and inflammatory bowel disease. So we want to use whole foods, and we want to, again, maximize health using those whole foods and avoid the drugs and the chemicals.
Yeah, excellent. You know, as a new dog owner, I've found that my frustrations with traditional medical approaches for people also applies to dogs. And so many vets seem to lack training in natural remedies and nutrition. Is the influence of big pharma in the canine world similar to what I'm dealing with in the human medical world?
It is huge. Big pharma and big pet food. And unfortunately, the largest pet food manufacturer, which is a candy company, is also now the largest owner of veterinary clinics in Europe and the US. They happen to own 2/3 of the specialty and emergency veterinary clinics in the United States. So talk about something that needs to go before the FTC and be broken up. They have a monopoly. They have bought our imaging systems. They've bought our largest veterinary lab, and they own all these clinics. They also own a lot of general practices. And unfortunately, they're not really fun to work for. And so there's a lot of frustration in the veterinary world. And the veterinarians that work for them are obviously pushed to sell their foods, push toward their foods. So coming in as a client and saying, no, I want to make my own food, or I want to feed raw food, or I want to go all natural with my pet, tons of pushback.
Let's talk about this kibble, because I've heard it's not the healthy option, yet vets recommend it. And share your insights on kibble versus, as you mentioned, raw, cooked, or freeze-dried options.
Yeah, so the problems with kibble is if they have meals in them, those are rendered meals. If it says specifically chicken meal, at least you know it's chicken. If it says poultry meal, it could be any bird. If it says meat meal, it could be any animal. And unfortunately, rendered products, when you see chicken on a label for pet food, you're thinking of the chicken that you would buy for your family in the grocery store. That's not what goes into the rendered products and into the kibbles. Now, there are a few decent kibbles. The ones that are baked tend to be better companies because they don't have these meals in them. But for instance, chicken meal or poultry meal is generally made from the whole chicken, meaning the feathers, the intestines, the entire bird. When you see meat and bone meal, that is a whole bunch of animals, and it's the animals that were not suitable for human consumption, or the cuts of meat that are not suitable for human consumption. So a cow dies out in the field. Well, they don't want to send it to the landfill, so it goes to the rendering plant. That cow may have been dead for days. It may be rotting meat, but it's cooked at very high temperatures and melted down. And I hope no one's eating their breakfast or lunch while they're listening, but it's basically melted down, and then they skim off the fat and then dehydrate it into a meal. Unfortunately, most rendered products where we have this mishmash of any kind of dead animal contain euthanasia solution. And the FDA is very aware of this. And the head of the largest rendering association in the country gave a speech at the American Association of Feed Control Officials meeting and said it is nearly impossible to have a rendered product without euthanasia solution in it, which means animals that were euthanized, put down, are going into this vat. So when you're feeding the food, your pet is actually getting euthanasia solution in their bowl. That is not acceptable. FDA says it's acceptable because it's in such a low amount that it's not going to do any harm. I'm sorry, any amount of euthanasia solution is too much. We also have moldy grains that go into pet feed because they can't go to the human consumption. The problem is when we cook it, we kill the mold, but the mold releases toxins, aflatoxins, which are mold toxins. So there's a whole bunch of them, fumatoxins. Those cause liver failure in our pets. So a lot of times when animals go in and they have their lab work run, the thing that we see very commonly is elevated liver enzymes. And a lot of times it's coming from these mold toxins that are in their food. The other problem is these kibble foods, again, have that long chemical list, because after the food has been highly processed at very high heats, the nutritional value really drops. So they have to add back in that synthetic vitamin mineral mix. And unfortunately, mistakes get made in the formulation of those very commonly. We had a huge recall in 2018 and 2019 where tens of thousands of animals died because there was too much vitamin D in the vitamin mineral mix that was used by many, many pet food companies. They were very slow to do the recalls. And so we lost a lot of pets to kidney failure from excess vitamin D. So it's really hard to kill them with whole foods, but it's really easy to kill them when you have a mistake.
So true. You know, what really surprises me is how many pet owners are incredibly mindful about their own diets. They avoid foods like dyes, synthetic ingredients, pesticides, added chemicals, yet they don't think twice about what they're feeding their dogs. This commercial pet food, as you mentioned, loaded with so many crap in there. Why do people place so much blind trust in the pet food industry regarding their furry friends' nutrition, but they're so mindful of their own?
Well, part of it is advertising, but part of it is also they don't understand the words in the labeling. So you can go to the grocery store, and I recommend never buying your pet food in the grocery store. It's in the center where all the processed food is. It's not around the outskirts where we have the fresh food. That's for a reason. But they don't understand the labeling. So a product can say natural Well, it may say natural, but if it's got a synthetic vitamin mineral mix in there, that's not natural. It could say holistic. There is no definition for the word holistic in pet food. And I've had this conversation with people who are really health conscious for themselves and for their children and their families. And yet they're going to the grocery store and they're buying a bag of holistic natural kibble. And they don't realize that that means nothing. Any pet food company could put holistic on any label and it doesn't mean anything. And you're right. When we're reading labels, we should be looking, are there dyes? Are there chemicals? Are there things in there, gums and glutens, things that we would not want to eat? They're not healthy for our pets. And by the way, our pets really don't see color the way we do. So when they add in those food colorings, those dyes, it's not for the pets, it's to please the pet owner. Your dog doesn't care. When he looks at the bowl, he's seeing a bunch of little brown dead balls. That's what's in the bowl.
Most dogs, they just scarf it down fast. They don't even look. You blink and it's gone. It's like, what was the use of making it so pretty? They don't give a crap. They just bite it.
They really don't. And cats are much, much pickier, by the way, but dogs are just like, yeah, whatever, food. My dogs, I feed raw and gently cooked foods for them. And I do a lot of fresh foods. Like I'll put a fresh raw egg on their platter and then I'll put their little mushroom mix and their little sardines. And I have these beautifully plated things with their fresh veggies and their fruits. And literally it's gone in 3 seconds. And I'm like, it just took me half an hour to make that beautiful.
What about those pet owners that do have picky dogs as eaters? Even they put their noses up at healthy food options. What are some tips that you can share for encouraging better eating habits when the dog just says, nope, not interested, and walks away?
Usually there's an underlying cause. So for instance, I've had two that are that way, and they're really frustrating because most of my dogs are just absolute food hounds. But one I have right now, he has hydrocephalus, and hydrocephalic dogs, which a lot of the short-nosed, what I call bubble-headed breeds, the brachycephalic dogs, a lot of them have underlying hydrocephalus, and chewing actually hurts for them. So it could be that there's a dental problem. It could be that there's some GI issues going on. One of the things that we're doing a lot of now is testing microbiome, which is just a stool test, but looking at the distribution of the bacteria and viruses and fungal elements in their guts and seeing whether we have an imbalance. And a lot of times there's just this sort of simmering imbalance that causes just a little bit of GI upset, a little bit of reflux. And we have great, easy ways to fix that now. We do fecal microbiome transplants, which is just a capsule. They're golden poop pills is what they are. A lot of times there is an underlying cause, and that's why the dogs are backing off. If they're on medications, that can cause microbiome disruption. There are some dogs that are just picky and they can get really stuck on, I'm only going to eat this one thing. For some of them, it can be a texture thing. So some dogs do not like the dry kibble, but if you feed them fresh food, they're all over it. We have some that do not like or understand the texture of raw food. You would think that would be obvious for them, like, oh, raw chicken, that's great. I know what that is because that's what they would eat in the wild, but they don't. So particularly when I get in a rescue dog that's been fed kibble its whole life, if I put a raw meal in front of them, they will usually walk away because they don't recognize it as food. If you gently cook the food, warm it up so that it's really releasing those good smells. With my little guy with hydrocephalus, I have to actually place the first bite of food in his mouth. Physically have to put it in his mouth. And then he's like, oh yeah, food. And then he'll eat. So he's really weird. And I actually did a video. We showed me doing that. And I had so many people who emailed in and said, oh my gosh, I have to do the same thing for my dog. So, you know, some of them just need that little jump start.
I got one better. I made the mistake of giving my dog my food. And now he's like, oh, I'm not going to eat what he gave me. I'm going to sit here and watch him and see what he's eating. So I have to pretend I'm eating his food and act like it's yummy and put it down and he eats it.
See, the dumb games that our dogs train us to do.
It's like once I make it look like his dog food's delicious to me, then oh, I want it. All right, I can handle it. No.
Exactly.
Let me ask you this. Many dog owners, they're so overwhelmed by all this extensive list of required vaccines. You got distemper and rabies and Bordetella and Parvo, along with the monthly flea and tick and heartworm preventatives. Is all this stuff truly necessary? And are these things really benefiting our dogs?
They're not necessary and they're harming our dogs. So the flea and tick chemicals are pesticides and they are neurotoxins, meaning they're toxic to the nervous system. So they're meant to affect the nervous system of fleas and ticks. Unfortunately, we have a certain population of dogs and cats who are extremely sensitive to these chemicals, and they will develop seizures and tremors, inability to walk, and death, particularly the oral pesticides. This is one of the worst things I think the veterinary community has ever endorsed. It's one of the worst things the pharmaceutical industry has ever come up with, but they are making billions of dollars. There's actually a lot of lawsuits right now against these pesticides because they are just tragically killing so many animals. And there are so many natural ways that people can repel fleas and ticks. Most of those chemicals do not repel the fleas and ticks. They kill them after they bite the dog or cat. So people think that, oh, this will prevent them from getting Lyme disease or tick-borne disease or tapeworms from the fleas. It does not, because the pests actually have to get on the animal in order for these to work. Most of them do not repel. Whereas if we use natural products, essential oils, diatomaceous earth, neem powder, yarrow, those things actually repel the fleas and ticks. So we have a whole blog, a whole list of those on our website. And then as far as the vaccines go, the core vaccines, they actually just added another one, which really makes me mad because they added Lepto, which is a highly reactive vaccine. I rarely gave it in my practices. I won't give it to my own dogs. I won't give it to any animal under 10 pounds. But rabies is a core vaccine that is required by almost all municipalities and states and federally. And then the other core vaccine would be distemper and parvo. The distemper and parvo vaccine, a single vaccine given at the right time for a puppy, so anytime after 16 weeks of age, one vaccine is probably good for lifetime. And we can do a blood test called a titer. Instead of just going in for that booster that's recommended, you can instead say, I want a titer drawn. I want that blood test. Because if the blood test comes back with active antibodies against parvo or distemper or rabies, it means they're protected. It means their body recognizes that they've got antibodies. And if they get exposed to distemper or parvo, their body is going to attack it, kill it off, and they won't get sick. So we know that titers work. We know that the vaccines last much longer than the annual. And the whole annual thing, it just got started at the beginning with, hey, this is kind of like the dentist. You go and they automatically give you your card for coming back in 6 months. The dentists have figured out how to get people back in their office. They're very smart. Veterinarians said, well, if we tell them they need shots every year, that'll get them back in the office at least once a year. Except even AVMA and the American Animal Hospital Association now recommend that those vaccines be given no more often than every 3 to 5 years. Unfortunately, at the last survey that was done a couple of years ago, over 60% of veterinarians were still recommending annual vaccinations, even though the powers that be are recommending every 3 to 5 years maximum. My own dogs, they get the one and they're done. So it can be very difficult if you take your dog to boarding, grooming, daycare, training. A lot of those facilities insist on a ton of vaccinations. And my recommendation is to find a way around it. Have someone pet sit your pet at your house. Find a small facility that doesn't require all those vaccinations. You can get titers done instead. Have a groomer come to your house. There's a lot of different ways to go about it. It can be a little difficult, though. Sometimes it does result in large arguments with veterinarians.
Definitely. And it goes back to parents are often looking, hey, what are you going to give my kid? Wait a minute. They question the vet, all these shots. And it's like, well, here's my dog. Give them what you want. It's like they don't think twice.
Because again, they've been so well trained. The veterinary community has done a pretty good job for the last 40 years training people to come in every year for those shots. But we now know that they're not necessary. And another thing that we have discovered recently is the huge debate over spay and neuter. We have great studies now, especially in large breed dogs, showing that leaving them intact protects them against arthritis and many cancers. So unfortunately, we've gone the wrong way. We've gone to early spay and neuter. Some of these animals are being spayed and neutered as early as 8 weeks, and we're actually causing hip problems, elbow problems, a lot of inflammation and cancers later on. So people need to rethink that as well. Again, we have a ton of information on that in my book, Keeping Your Pets Naturally Healthy, and also on our website for people who want to learn more about that. And unfortunately, the conversation around that with the veterinarians, again, goes the wrong way. Most veterinarians were trained to say, well, if you don't spay your female, she's going to develop mammary cancer and die. We have proof that that's not so. If we spay them, we might open them up to bone cancer and hemangiosarcoma, which is cancer of the spleen. So we need to start having different conversations.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring that up because a lot of rescue centers, they force the neutering before the 8 weeks, and it's their procedure. If you beg them and you say, hey, I promise in 6 months I'll do it, they won't let that dog out of that rescue center.
I understand that. The local shelter by my practice when I was in New Jersey, they would give people vouchers. People would pay ahead of time if they got a puppy or kitten to bring it back at 6 months of age to have it spayed or neutered. And 6 months is still way too early. And what they found, they did a 10-year retrospective study, and what they found that only 1/3 of the people brought the animals back for spay and neuter. And that was people who had already paid for it. So if you pay for it and you can only get 1/3 of the people to do it, and so it became a population explosion problem. So they had to change their rules. I get it. But as a responsible pet owner, I've had to go to bat many times for my clients who have chosen to wait, particularly if they have larger breed dogs. They're like, yes, I'm going to spay, but I'm going to wait until she's 3 years old. I want to make sure that we've got as much protection as possible, whatever. I've had to go to bat for these clients. Some rescues will understand that if we really convince them of who they're dealing with. Others, it's just like, these are my rules. That's it. No, you can't have a dog.
Yeah, it's so true. Let's talk about allergies. They're so common in dogs, including like itchy skin, runny eyes, paw biting, and traditional treatments involve long-term medications like Apoquel. What holistic approaches do you recommend for identifying and managing allergies effectively? Do any of these hair and stool sample allergy tests work to avoid certain things?
Yeah, they do. We have a lot of different testing methods. So there are some hair analysis testing. There are blood tests, which I think are a little better. For food allergies, we can do saliva tests, which are very good. I've done a lot of different ones on my dogs over the years, mostly because if I'm going to talk about a product, I like to try it out. So I'll test my dogs even if they don't have allergies just to see what comes up. They're accurate to a point, but you have to take it a little bit of a grain of salt, particularly with the food testing. The ideal way to know on food is to do an elimination diet. So usually I'll say, well, let's get a rabbit-based food because that's very hypoallergenic. Occasionally I get a dog allergic to rabbit, but very rarely. The thing with allergies is, remember I said that those synthetic vitamins and minerals in the food can trigger allergies. So that's just one thing out of many. And then we have dust mites and storage mites in the food. True food allergies are pretty rare, but we do have food intolerances. What we do know is that microbiome that I was talking about in the gut, that's responsible for 80% of the immune system. So almost all allergies are related to leaky gut, which is where the intestines have some inflammation. And so allergens, the things that are causing the allergies, are getting into the bloodstream through the gut. So we actually start by treating the gut. So decreasing the inflammation in the gut and restoring that gut microbiome, and then getting on a really good whole food, human grade food diet, 90% of them will show extreme improvement when we do that. So the drugs like Apoquel and steroids and cyclosporin, Atopica, those unfortunately are not curing allergies. They are treating the symptom, which is the itch. Cytopoint injections is another one. The only problem is that those all cause cancer. Your immune system is responsible for finding early cancers in the body and destroying those cells. When we suppress the immune system, we end up with cancer. So unfortunately, we have tons of dogs that are now dealing with cancers because they were on all these drugs for so many years. So I highly recommend that people work very hard to get their dogs off those medications. And unfortunately, with a traditional veterinarian, they don't understand leaky gut. They don't understand the microbiome issue. And they're just going to offer more and more and more drugs. And the whole goal is to get away from the drugs, actually cure the problem. And allergies can be very resistant. There's a great study that was done in Denmark with dogs that showed that parent dogs with allergies, if they were fed kibble, and then if the puppies were fed kibble, the puppies had almost 100% chance that they would also have allergies. If the parents had allergies and the puppies were put on a raw food or whole food diet, their chances of inheriting and having the same allergy problems were only about 20%. So diet has a huge amount to do with it, and it's because of the microbiome issue.
Yeah. What about these costly, quote, prescription dog foods marketed as healthier options? Are they better choices, and why do they require a prescription when they contain no drugs? That's confused me. To me, that would be like an MD saying, you really should eat more healthy salads. I'll write you a prescription for the healthier salads only available at the pharmacy.
The reason for that was it's a marketing scheme, and the only one that is allowed to be called a prescription diet is Hill's. The others are medical diets or veterinary diets. The ones that are the big companies, the big candy companies manufacturing them, or the big dog food companies, they're made with the really horrible, horrible ingredients that we've been talking about. And a lot of them are like hydrolyzed corn, hydrolyzed soy. One of them is actually hydrolyzed chicken feathers. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't think chicken feathers is a complete diet. And then they just add a vitamin mineral mix. It's sort of like, here, have your piece of shoe leather and I hope you survive. The good news is that we now have a few small companies that have medical diets for kidney disease, heart disease, liver disease that are made with whole foods. So we need people to look for those. Darwin's is one company. Medicus is another one. I believe Cheedog may have them. But there are companies coming out with medical diets. I have recipes for all those things in my books. So you can do it with whole food. You can do it with healthy food. Your veterinarian's not going to recommend that because they don't make money off of that. If they give you a recipe to go home and make, you're not coming in every month to buy more food. And that can be a huge profit center. When we go to the veterinary conferences and we go to business meetings, they're like, oh, 20% of your clinic income can be from these prescription diets because people have to come in and get them every single month. And while they're there, they'll remember that they need something else or they make an appointment.
Now, I know your book has over 60 recipes for dogs, and I've been making healthy meals for mine. But when I told my vet that, she said, and I quote, there's not adequate vitamins and minerals in people food for dogs, which gets added to store-bought canine food for their needs. When you hear a fellow veterinarian telling somebody that, what goes through your mind? I mean, it's like whole food is bad, is basically what she's saying.
Yeah. Well, it makes me sad because they've been brainwashed and they're not opening their mind to what is the truth. If you think about feeding your children, and people go so crazy making sure that everything is like perfect for their dogs. When people get into this whole making their own food, they can get really down rabbit holes with micromanaging it. And I look at that and I would say to my veterinarian, listen, I've got a 4-year-old child. I don't micromanage that child's diet. I don't make sure that every diet is complete and balanced. You know, that hot dog and potato chips for lunch, probably pretty bad, but nobody freaks out about that. And nobody says, oh, we have to add vitamins and minerals. Now, if you look at cereal in the cereal aisle, it all has vitamins and minerals added to it because we know that the cereal after it's processed is totally devoid of nutrients. So they just add them back in. But again, that's eating synthetic food. So it makes me sad because the veterinary industry is so beholden to the big pet food and big pharma that the veterinarians can't get out of their own way. They can't think outside the box and they say dumb things like that.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. Let me ask you about chewing. I know it's a natural behavior for dogs, but there's so many concerns out there about rawhide and now even its alternatives. What are the safest and healthiest options for dogs who love to chew?
So we have tons that are safe. Rawhide is not safe. It's usually made with processes that use things like formaldehyde. It's really not good and it's not digestible. So we get a lot of choking and a lot of obstructions with rawhide. So do not recommend that at all. There's a product called Nohide that I'm really not a fan of either. And a lot of the hard chews are made with potato starch. That's not something our dogs are meant to eat either. So I use things like dried fish skins that are in rolls. A really popular one is bully sticks, which are bull penises cut into pieces, but the dogs love them. So bully sticks, I don't like antlers. They're too hard, and I've seen way too many broken teeth from antlers. But horns are actually compressed hair. So like a ram horn is very different from a deer antler. So I don't do antlers, but some dogs can do okay with ram horns. Collagen rolls. Collagen is underneath of the hide. It's sort of the subcutaneous level. Rolled collagen sticks are very good because they chip into little pieces. So it's not a choking hazard. And we actually have a pet choking awareness day, June 22nd every year, because so many pets do choke on their long-term chews. So I want people to be aware that if you are giving a long-term chew, something that you want to keep your pet occupied, don't give it and then walk away. Always supervise when they are playing with their toys or chewing on something. Choking happens. We have over 200,000 choking incidents per year in the veterinary emergency rooms.
Wow. What about these dental hygiene chews for dogs? Are they any good? Do they really brush our dog's teeth and are they healthy?
Well, again, we have to look at the ingredients in them. If they have chlorhexidine in them, run the other way. If they're just a bunch of starch, like potato starch, pea starch, again, that's not something that our dogs are supposed to eat. Our dogs are supposed to eat raw meaty bones. So like chicken backs or chicken necks or duck necks. That is nature's toothbrush. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't want to feed raw bones. I get it. And you cannot feed a cooked bone ever. That is a recipe for huge disaster in emergency vet bills. But for the raw feeders, the raw meaty bones will keep those teeth really, really clean. So that's the best way to do it. There are some better dental chews than others. Don't look for the, I think it's the VOHC, the veterinary, it's the Oral Health Council. People that have products on that, they bought their way in. They're not approved because they're the best. They're approved because they paid the money to be approved. So it doesn't have to have the VOHC seal of approval.
Got that. What about, you talk about feed the dogs human good grade food. What are some foods maybe that we should know not to feed our dog? Obviously, pizza with Fido is not a good idea, right?
Well, I mean, pizza's not so great for us either.
That's true.
Doesn't mean I don't eat it, but
we don't think about that, but it's like, feed it to the dog.
Yeah. And you know, a little bit of pizza crust once in a while is not going to kill your dog either. But things that they absolutely cannot eat. They cannot eat grapes and raisins. Those will cause kidney failure. They cannot eat anything with xylitol in it. I recommend that neither us nor our pets eat peanut butter because peanuts are so commonly affected by aflatoxins, the mold toxins. Almond butter is fine, but peanut butter now has xylitol in it as a sweetener quite often, and xylitol is deadly for our pets. So if they get into your purse and get chewing gum that has xylitol, or if you have peanut butter that has xylitol, which is also labeled as birch sugar sometimes, you definitely need to avoid that. Macadamia nuts, they can't have. There's a few things. Nutmeg is not good for them, but it's not something we usually give them anyway. Raw dough, so rising dough, alcohol, those sorts of things.
What about calories? I'm looking now at labels now with dogs. I go, this could be confusing for people. It's easy for people food. You see 150 calories, but boy, with the dog labels, it's not as easy. What do people need to know when it comes to calories?
Yeah, it's not as easy. And the amount of calories that are needed per dog is also extremely variable. So a 10-pound dog needs more calories per pound than an 80-pound dog, generally speaking. So a 10-pound dog might need 30 calories per pound of body weight or 300 calories per day, whereas an 80-pound dog might only need 15 to 20 calories per pound per day. So it can be variable, and it can also depend on the type of food that you're feeding. So kibble has a ton of carbohydrates in it. It's about 60% carbs, and that tends to pack the pounds on more than a high meat diet, like a raw diet that's not going to have any starches in it. And so they might need more on that diet that they're going to burn off better. It can be variable. We have formulas in the book if you want to do the math. We also have a chart that says if you have a 20-pound dog, feed them this many ounces or this many calories, trying to make it fairly easy for people to do. And then the recipes that are in the book, I tell you how many calories there are per ounce. So it is variable. It can be very difficult, especially for people who don't like to math. What I tell people is, look, if you can weigh your dog, if they're small enough that you can hold them and get on the scale with them, weigh your dog, figure out how much you think you should be feeding the dog based on whatever chart you're using or whatever the bag, box, or can says that you should be feeding. And do that for a couple of weeks, weigh them again, really look at them with a critical eye and say, do they look like they're losing a little? Are they gaining a little? If you can't feel their ribs, then they're too fat. If they don't have a waist, they're too fat. Most pets are too fat. But it's really going to depend on their activity level. A hunting dog that's out in the field all day is going to need a lot more calories than my dog who lays on the sofa all day. So there's a lot of factors that go into it, just like people.
And also, a lot of people feed their dog right, but then they give them all these snacks throughout the day. And boy, those are fattening. I've been looking at labels, go, geez, they pack some calories into these little snacks.
They do. And I don't use a lot of processed snacks, but the snacks that I use for my dogs are like freeze-dried hearts, freeze-dried pieces of liver. There's a company called Coco Therapy that makes coconut treats that are very low calorie. So there's all kinds of things that we can use. You can also use fresh fruits and vegetables. You can use a piece of carrot. Some dogs love lettuce and celery. You could use fruits like watermelon and cantaloupe, blueberries, raspberries. So just figure out what your dog likes. What I do for my guys, every night they each get two frozen treats. So I have molds and I will freeze like bone broth with some mushroom powder or some probiotic powder or a couple of blueberries. And I freeze it in these little treat molds. And then that's their special treat.
Wow, such great information. I could talk to you for hours, and you're always very enlightening. In the minute we have left, anything else you'd like to share that we didn't cover today?
My biggest advice for pet parents is education, 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 because education is empowerment. And when you have the data and the facts in your brain or in a book in your hand that you can actually show your veterinarian and say, no, look, here's the data, here's the studies behind it, then it's hard for them to give you as much pushback. And I don't want people to fight with their veterinarians. I want you to find a veterinarian that you can work with. So for instance, my pets go to a traditional veterinarian because I'm not practicing where I live now. And when I walked into her, first I took her my books. So that gave her a clue who I was. And I said, I don't vaccinate my animals and I feed raw food. And she looked at me and she said, okay. And I said, well, we can work together. She sells prescription diet. She sells all the flea and tick chemicals. She recommends vaccines across the board. But she was willing to say, yeah, that's okay. And so anybody that I send to her, if they say Dr. Judy Morgan referred me, she knows right off the bat, she's not going to talk about chemical parasite prevention. She's not going to talk about prescription diets. And she just treats them differently because she knows that they're coming from a different place. And so you need to find somebody who's open-minded enough to be willing to work with you and just have that conversation without feeling like your head's going to explode.
Yeah. Great info. Thanks for joining us, and pun intended there, F-A-N-G-S. My dog's sitting right here looking up saying, I think you're talking about me.
Yeah, always.
That's great. Always a pleasure. You're welcome back anytime. You shared so much in such little amount of time. I think a lot of people took some good notes. And Dr. Morgan's new book, it's called The Yin and Yang 2.0 Nutrition for Dogs, Maximizing Health and Whole Foods, Not Drugs. You can get your copy at drjudymorgan.com. And while there, be sure and check out the many resources available, including articles, videos, podcasts, some great healthy products, and more. You can follow Dr. Judy on Instagram and YouTube at Dr. Judy Morgan, on Facebook at Judy Morgan DVM. And for my daily health post, you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Dr. David Friedman. On Instagram, I'm at Dr. D. Friedman. If you heard something today that can benefit a dog owner that you know, send them a link to this podcast. It's available to yourgoodhealthradio.com and radiomd.com. And check out our podcast library and share these segments with friends, family, coworkers, and on social media. As I always say, sharing is caring, and that's positively important today. P-A-W-S, there's another one. Couldn't resist. You can also subscribe to future podcasts at iHeartRadio and iTunes. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.